It's religion today, it's ideology today, and our secularist friends also have a faith.
Some kind of Disneyland fantasy.
I know how this is going to get heard in the secular world.
Where the pseudo-Christian masks are off.
That's nonsense, ladies and gentlemen.
Apologetics isn't just about giving answers to other people's questions. It's also about learning to question other people's answers or even question the question itself.
In a Christian worldview.
Welcome to Quantum, the podcast that covers the world and is listened to from countries all over the world. This is episode number 71. We're into December, so I thought this music would be appropriate.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas everywhere you go. Take a look in the 5 and 10.
Except it's not really beginning to feel a lot like Christmas, at least where I am. This is such a strange experience being here in Sydney just now, because I think of Christmas as being a time when the nights are long, the days are short, the weather is cold, there's even a possibility of snow, and here we're in heat. And perhaps above all, the news here is the bushfires, which continue to cover this city in smoke. And in fact, today for me has been the worst day that there's been so far. Lungs are finding it difficult to breathe. But, you know, we are going to focus on Christmas. And I was thinking this amazing story from Harrods in London, England, where you can get to see Santa in Harrods, which is fine and lovely and great. And I'm sure lots of people enjoy doing that. But there's a queue, and it can be quite a queue. So, do you know, you can buy 2,000 worth of goods in from Harrods, and you get fast-tracked. It's like there's economy Santa, and there's business class Santa, and there's first class Santa. I'm pretty sure that's not what Christmas is supposed to be about.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas. Toys in every store, but the prettiest sight to see is the holly that will be on your own front door. Sure, it's Christmas once more.
We're going to, in this podcast, consider a lot about values, and we're going to come back here to Australia to consider all about Australian values. So there are two stories which to me are a little bit contrary and show that values kind of mixed up. One is the Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, meeting with a Taliban hostage, Timothy Weeks, and giving him a Bible, and Weeks speaking a marvelous testimony about how it was his Christian faith which sustained him. Good for Mr. Morrison for recognizing that, and especially good for Mr. Weeks in his testimony about that. However, I'm not that keen on what the Prime Minister then went on to say, because he spoke about the resilience and irrepressible optimism of the Australian character. Now, I think it was Mr. Weeks' faith that kept him through, not so much his Australian character. I guess politicians always want to talk up their own nations in contrast with others. But there are things in Australia that people can be ashamed of too. And this one is difficult. I was at a meeting this week and somebody mentioned the Medivac law and used it as a means to attack religious people, meaning Christians. What is the Medivac law? It's a law which allows refugees who are sick, who are being kept on an island, two islands in fact, and if they are sick enough, then they get to come to Australia. Now, that has just been repealed. Now, what is all that about? There's part of it, it's like all situations, it can be complex. Part of it, there is a complexity in it, because there are people who can abuse that system. But then also think about this. There are people who are abused. There are people who are ill. On Manus Island, there are people who have attempted suicide. And we're not talking massive numbers. There are 135 refugees were brought to the mainland for treatment last year under this law. they're hardly an existential threat to border protection and an attack on Australia. I don't know. There's something, maybe I don't understand it, but there's something deeply repellent to me about refusing people, by passing a law which prevents people who are sick coming to this country as refugees. There's just something that doesn't sit well at all. Some of you will doubtless have a different opinion. Please do pass it on. Speaking of values, though, let's talk about European values. And there was an extraordinary clip played on the BBC of Milan Kundera, the Czech writer famous for the unbearable likeness of being, who had been de-citizened by his country because of critical comments that he had made many years ago. And he refuses to do interviews, but this was an old one from 1998. And I want you to listen carefully to this, to what he says about Europe. I think this is absolutely fascinating. And as Christians, we need to grasp what this is about.
In the Middle Ages, European unity rested on the common religion. In the modern era, religion yielded its position to culture, to cultural creation, which came to embody the supreme values by which Europeans recognized themselves, defined and identified themselves. Now, in our own time, culture is in turn yielding its position. But to what and to whom? What sphere will provide the sort of supreme values that could unify Europe? Technology? The marketplace? Politics? Evolving the democratic ideal, the principle of tolerance? But if that tolerance no longer has any rich creativity or any powerful thought to protect, will it not become empty and useless? I don't know. I merely believe I know that culture has already yielded. And thus the image of European unity slips away into the past. European, one who is nostalgic for Europe.
Okay, what's he doing? He's talking about European values. And in case you missed it, let me just summarize it. He said that European unity came from religion. That was true. The European Union refuses to recognize that. But Europe was the first continent to receive the gospel and the first continent to be Christianized for good or for ill. And the unity did come from religion. He then points out, and I found this fascinating, that the value then came, or the unity came from culture. So the idea of supreme values. But, and this was 21 years ago, he then goes on to say that culture is now yielding. It's giving way, and culture is no longer the unifying factor that it once was. And he asks, to what? To technology, to the marketplace, to politics, to tolerance. And he says it's become empty and useless. I don't know. He says, is it fascinating? I mean, you heard it. I don't know what's going to replace. But culture and unity and religion have slipped into the past. In fact, he says a European is now somebody who is nostalgic for Europe because we don't know what it is anymore and we don't know what European values are. I think it's well worth reading Doug Murray's The Strange Death of Europe to grasp and get hold of this. And if you want to know where this confusion is going, listen to this clip from Angela Merkel, the German Chancellor.
Meinungsfreiheit in unserem Land ist gegeben. Und all die, die dauernd behaupten, sie dürfen nicht mehr ihre Meinung sagen, denen muss sie einfach sagen, wer seine Meinung sagt. Und wenn sie pronunziert ist, der muss damit leben. Das ist Widerspruch.
Okay, it was in German. And I guess I'm going to have to translate a little bit because maybe not everyone listening to this speaks German. But hello to our German listeners as well. German's a great language, by the way. I love German. I studied it at school, and I wish I'd kept it up. But she's talking about freedom of expression and expressing an opinion. And rightly, she says, expressing an opinion has consequences because people can disagree with it. Who's going to disagree with that? But then she goes somewhere very, very dangerous. She talks about freedom of expression having its limits, again, which we would agree, the old standard of, you know, if you shout fire in a crowded theater, okay? But what she then goes on to say is this: those limits begin where hatred is spread, where the dignity of other people is violated. And she speaks about this parliament will and must impose speech limitations. Okay, what is wrong with that? Well, I'm sure that you can spot the problem. Who defines what is hatred, and who defines where the dignity of other people is violated? So, for example, to be critical of Islam or to question same-sex marriage, is that hatred, and is the dignity of other people being violated? So should that be banned? Well, let me take it a step further. What about being critical of Christianity and mocking Christians? Should that be banned? Is that hatred violating people's dignity? It seems to me that this is a profoundly dangerous route, and it ties in very much with what Milan Kundera was saying, because we don't know what we are anymore. We don't know what our values are anymore, and we're just left to this mishmash of confusion. That is very much true of Europe, and I think it is also true of the United States and Australia, and indeed throughout Western liberal democracies. The attack upon us is massive, and it's likely to succeed because we've rejected our Christian roots. We've looked at Australian values and European values. What about Chinese values? Well, there's a fascinating story where an employee of one of China's largest tech firms has revealed how the communist government is manipulating public opinion by monitoring citizens' mobile phone use and blocking any words which are deemed sensitive to the state, such as Falun Gong or even Almighty God. There is, in fact, no privacy in China. If anyone says anything deemed unfavorable to the Communist Party, then they are going to be in trouble. And the people who listen in, if they don't pick up on this, they themselves will be in trouble. That is a worrying, worrying development. But then also Muslim values. Now, again, I'm going to be really, really careful about what we say here. Clearly, and at least my understanding and my experience of Muslims is that the majority of Muslims do not advocate the use of violence. However, a significant minority do. And we have evidence of that in the fact that really the most persecuted people in the world are Christians, and the people who largely do the persecuting, apart from the odd few communists and dictators, are Muslims. So a Korean evangelist has just been murdered in southeast Turkey. Jinwook Kim, age 41, was stabbed 3 times in the Turkish city of Diyarbakir. He'd been there working for 5 years. He has a family and has one child, another one due within a few days. Just think of that. Poor family. A Turkish evangelist who also received a death threat after the incident said, "We always get threats. A brother prophesied a few days ago that the government are going to kick out these foreigners and probably kill a few Turkish brothers. They're going to cause chaos. They know that I'm trying to spread the gospel so that they may target me too. This may be a sign." Did you hear the one about the church in Burkina Faso where suspected Muslim extremists launched an attack, killing at least 14 people, and that included the pastor and children? Why is that not headline news? Why is there not condemnation? You know, I think in the British election, imagine if the Israeli government had gone into a Palestinian village and done that. It would have been headline news. There would have been calls for sanctions. Jeremy Corbyn and everyone else would have joined in, and rightly so. But why do these Africans not matter, these African Christians? It's just a puzzle to me. And let's talk about UK values because, well, we're so much more civilized in so many ways, aren't we? Except we've had another stabbing, another attack on the streets of London. And again, I think about that as my daughter being there. And the man responsible, Khan, had been part of a de-radicalization program, which is the attempt to help people who have been radicalized in Islam. And it does seem as though he was a kind of poster boy for that. And yet within 8 years of being put in prison, he's released and he's allowed onto the streets of London. He manages to get a knife. He manages to kill two people. And if it wasn't for the bravery of bystanders, he could have killed a lot more. But there's something else as well. And this is where things get really confusing, isn't it? Because the three men who stopped him, they're being hailed as heroes. But are they? They're heroes for that. But life is much more complicated. Because one of them is a man called James Ford, who's a convicted murderer who killed a 21-year-old woman called Amanda by slitting her throat. He murdered a disabled girl. He's not a hero. He did something good in that sense. But what was he doing out of prison? He was jailed for life in 2003 for killing this 21-year-old woman who had a mental age of a 15-year-old, brutally killing her. And it's 2019 and he's out. I don't know. You sometimes feel that there is no justice in the world. Okay, let's come on to Scottish values. This applies, I think, in lots of other places as well. But an Edinburgh University event discussing how gender issues are taught in Scotland schools has been cancelled. Why? Because claims that the safety of women speakers and attendees are at risk. There were going to be increased security staff, but the event has been postponed because members of the university staff's Pride Network had resigned because the women's rights event was to go ahead. Their poster says this. Now listen to this carefully. Remember, this is a women's rights event that's been postponed because of threats from transgender activists. That's what it boils down to. Physical threats. They say this. The staff Pride Network Committee are relieved the event is not going ahead at this time, and we are working with the university to provide a safe, inclusive environment for all staff and students to work and study. Except if you disagree with the trans agenda, you are not going to be safe. The police could not guarantee their physical safety in a university in Scotland. Is this Scottish values? Or my city, Dundee? Somebody sent me a poster a couple of weeks ago. You know what it says on it? Trans rights now, TERFs, that's feminists who don't support trans, in the sea. And that was posted beside the sea. It's advocating violence. It's unbelievable. Let's come on to sports values. And someone else sent me this from the Premier League. Football has the power to bring us together. Clubs and communities are stronger when everyone feels welcome. And the Premier League are going to proudly stand alongside Stonewall in promoting equality and diversity. So there'll be a rainbow laces campaign and there will be bespoke rainbow laces, pitch flags, ball plinths, handshake boards, substitutes boards. There will also be rainbow captains' armbands and rainbow laces. And heaven help the footballer who refuses to wear one of those. LED boards at the stadiums will highlight the campaign. Social media channels will feature a rainbow Premier League logo and posts about the campaign. Well, in one sense, you could say, well, there's nothing wrong with that, is there? Except this. It is, again, virtue signalling. And I want to know when the Premier League are going to do exactly the same campaign for the most persecuted group in the world right now, Christians. Or do we not count? Okay, one other story, and it's a sad story, but yeah, it is a sad story. Clive James, the Australian writer, poet, a multi-talented, highly intelligent man. Very, very sad because in all his intelligence, he found no room for God. And I've always find that depressing, but especially when you listen to this poem, which went viral towards the end of his life.
Japanese maple. Your death, near now, is of an easy sort. So slow a fading out brings no real pain. Breath growing short is just uncomfortable. You feel the drain of energy, but thought and sight remain, enhanced in fact. When did you ever see so much sweet beauty as when fine rain falls on that small tree and saturates your brick-back garden walls, so many amber rooms and mirror halls? Ever more lavish as the dusk descends, this glistening illuminates the air. It never ends. Whenever the rain comes, it will be there, beyond my time, but now I take my share. My daughter's choice, the maple tree, is new. Come autumn, and its leaves will turn to flame. What I must do is live to see that. That will end the game for me, though life continues all the same. Filling the double doors to bathe my eyes, a final flood of colours will live on as my mind dies, burned by my vision of a world that shone so brightly at the last and then was gone.
Okay, next week is the UK election. I've not said anything about it this week, but we will do a special on that next week. So we may be a day later than normal in producing this, but it is Christmas. We came in with a secular Christmas song. Let's leave with a Christian Christmas song. O come, Emmanuel. And this is a slightly different version, but I love it. I mean, heavy metal Christmas, you think it wouldn't work, but for me, it works with this song. God bless you, and please feel free to get in touch. Feel free to support the podcast through the Podbean. Feel free to give us information. Thanks for all of those who write in, and thanks for all your comments, positive and negative. It's all taken on board. May God bless you all, whether you're a Christian or not, and may you come to know the one who is worth knowing. See you next week.